Welcome back to The Scarlet Edit. I am your host, Nikki Corbett. This week, I was joined by Dr. Robin Buckley. Dr. Robin recently released a book called Marriage Incorporated. It reframes relationships through the lens of business strategy. What I loved about our conversation is so many of the different tools, tactics, and techniques she shared about having a successful relationship are things that we're already doing in the business environment. So many things she said, I was like, wait, I've done this at work. I've done that at work. I've done that before. And it makes so much sense. Our relationships are arguably the most important deal that we make in our entire lives. A marriage, while yes, it should be based in love, in true, amazing, wild, passionate love, it's also a business transaction. It's one that's legally binding. So why aren't we treating it that way? Dr. Robin and I had a wonderful discussion on all of these things and more. Let's get into it. Dr. Robin Buckley, welcome to The Scarlet Edit. I am so happy to have you here.
Nikki, thank you so much. I've been really looking forward to this conversation.
Yes, me too. You know, I really base the majority of my decisions about guests on energy. And I mean, obviously the topic is incredibly important as well. But even sometimes if I'm a little bit curious about what the guest may bring, if it's not like in exact alignment with the show, but I'm like, I like what they said, or I like that they, you know, actually listened to more than 25 seconds of my intro. I can tell. And so when you and I met, I was just immediately like, absolute yes, we need to do this.
Love it. Yeah, me too. This will be fun.
Yes, it will. So, okay. So the reason that I thought you would be such a great guest is because obviously on my show, we talk about relationships of all kinds. And marriage is a 50-50 gamble. And you have created a book to coach people through marriage and looking at it like a business and looking at it like you're making decisions as executives. And I thought that that was such a smart thing and smart way to think about entering into marriage. Because yes, while it is so much based on love, it's also a contract and a legally binding one.
Agreed.
And it should be treated as such. So tell me how you got here.
Yeah. So what you're referencing is the book that just recently came out that I've used. It really encapsulates the coaching model that I created probably about 12 or 15 years ago and slowly added to working with clients. It really came out of my work as an executive coach, where I was coaching a lot of female high performance executives. But eventually, as you well know, Nikki, it's hard for any of us to separate work from life. And so they talk about their relationships. Yeah. And we get to the conflict that they were having with their significant other. And I'd say, well, wait, you just told me about there was a conflict among the team that you're, or, you know, you're overseeing. How did you manage that? And they'd be like, oh, no, Robin, that's different. And, you know, I'd have to sit back and then I'd think, I'm like, why is it different? And so the more and more I worked with these women and talked about their relationships, I realized there's so much in the business world, whether you have a business background or not, doesn't matter, but so much that we can just take and generalize to our relationships, including with our significant others, to make it work as efficiently as those tools do in business. So it's so fun because it creates an objectivity and a strategy around a topic that usually is just emotional and reactive.
I mean, it is so interesting how we so just separate and keep in two different buckets, like our personal life and our professional life. And kind of like you said, you don't necessarily have to be a business owner or some high level executive. You're still in your job. You're making business decisions. You're having business conversations. Right. And so it's like utilizing those skills to have tough conversations at home. It makes so much sense.
Yeah. Yeah, it really, I have a lot of people who will say, well, you know, I'm a teacher or I'm a first responder or whatever. I'm not in business. I'm like, this is not rocket science. We're not going to be needing to go to Harvard to get our, you know, our MBAs. This is just basic strategies that create a platform that essentially, if I was to water down the whole thing, Nikki, it's about checking in, allowing couples to structure, schedule, and have the check-ins that are going to influence everything in their relationships. Honestly, I should have just written the book from that perspective because it really is what it comes down to.
Yeah. As you're talking, I'm thinking about, I had a a guest on a few weeks ago. One of the topics he referenced was this five-year check-in where couples kind of check in on like, you know, how are we doing? How are we feeling? Like what's working? What isn't? Kind of like in business, like the whole like stop, start, continue, right. You know, with business things. And when he said that, I was like, oh, this totally makes sense. We do these tasks and we do these activities on a regular basis in our work lives. Mm-hmm. Like, why aren't we having those same types of check-ins in our second lives?
Right. I mean, it is amazing to me. I think of all the things, even in your life, in my life, in people's lives, that we organize and schedule. We, you know, mm-hmm. check in and we look at our workout routine, our meal planning, our careers, our investments, you know, the vacation plans, everything in our life that we want to go well, we plan. We organize, we mm-hmm. check in with those people that are involved. And then we get to our relationships and it's like, let's just wing it. Let's just see how this happens. Let's hope it works out. And I'm like, oh my gosh, how did we get here where what most people would identify as the most important thing in their lives and we are leaving it to chance? That's just incredible to me.
It is so funny that you say that like that, because I was even thinking about our pets. I mean, I pay so much attention to my pet in like, you know, did he eat today? Did he drink enough water? Did he use the bathroom? Did he, you know, all of these different things where I'm like hyper-focused on his well-being.
Yeah.
And he's a dog, right. You know? So it's like, why wouldn't we be just as hyper-focused on our relationships with someone that we have married? And I mean, I know that my audience here, there are a lot of people, my largest age range is women 35 to 60 that listen to the show. So in that range, as you well know, there are a significant number of those women who have been divorced and do have that benefit of hindsight and are now out in the world if they're not already in a relationship or already remarried, but they're, you know, exploring and figuring out. And then I would say one of the gifts of divorce is that you can look back and see all the things that you would do differently mm-hmm. were you to be married again. So I think that this topic is very timely and very important as people go on those journeys and start meeting different men or women in their lives and, you know, maybe decide to get married again. So what are some of the things that you, you know, talk about in your coaching that people, you know, look to you for?
Yeah, I want to make sure your audience knows too. I am coming from exactly that place. As you remember from our conversation earlier, I am twice divorced, mm-hmm. which is ironic. I absolutely see the irony, but I always remind people that, you know, some of the titans of business or the best athletic coaches out there, they did not always have successes. They had failures and they learned from their failures. So when people say, well, how could you coach people about a successful relationship? I'm like, because I did it wrong twice. And I can help people from having that foresight to avoid it in their own lives. And probably the most significant thing, and you were talking about that specific, you know, group of women from 35 to about 60, 65, I would agree that there's a good percentage of that population that has been through a divorce or an unsuccessful long-term relationship. So they know what they don't want. But my question, my pushback to those types of clients, male or female, is, but now have you created a plan? Because it's mm-hmm. easy to say, well, I don't want that. I don't want that kind of personality or, you know, whatever it might be. But mm-hmm. how do you actually put it into a concrete plan? Do you have it written down? Which sounds crazy to some people. And I understand why, because we don't look at relationships from that structured, scaffolded perspective. But in my industry of psychology, if it's not written down, it's not real. And so you might have these ideas in your head, but where's the plan? Again, just like if a person walked into a bank and said, I have a business plan and I'd like a loan, they'd say, okay, let me see your plan. Like, oh, no, it's all up here. They'd say, bye-bye, come back when you have it written out. Same thing for dating or for, you know, making connections outside of an unsuccessful relationship. Take the ideas of what you do or don't want. Take the ideas of what are the lessons you learn and build it into a actual plan. So that would be the first thing I would say, Nikki.
I think that's brilliant. I mean, I often tell people that it's just as important to know what you don't want as it is to know what you do want, because you have to know the difference between the two in order to decide is somebody the right fit for you to spend your time with. And I think the older I get and the more I do anything in life, the more I look at it as like, is this a good investment of my time? Yeah. Because my time is the most valuable resource that I have. Therefore, I'm not going to just spend it willy-nilly. And I can't believe I just used that word either.
I like it. It's fine. It's good.
But I think writing things down and maybe some people don't necessarily know what they want, but if you have a list of what you don't want, write that down first, like get that ball rolling.
So when it comes to dating, I actually look at that as from a very structured perspective, the same as a marriage. So with dating, I really recommend individuals that they create an ICA. So in business, an ICA stands for an ideal client avatar. I had to think about that one for a second. Ideal client avatar. It's your customer. It's who mm-hmm. you're going to devote mm-hmm. time and money to draw, to connect with, to really try and develop a relationship with. Well, in dating, an ICA stands for ideal companion avatar. But again, most of us are like, I don't know, I'd like someone who plays tennis and who, I don't know, likes chocolate, whatever it might be. Hopefully it's deeper than that. But yeah. Have you really sat down and created the avatar, the template of what you are looking for? And some of that goes into what you just mentioned earlier or alluded to, is creating your list of negotiables and non-negotiables and not having it in your head. Write it down. What are the things that are absolute deal breakers? The things that you're like, there is no way I would be with this person. As an example, in my life, if a person isn't kind, I just can't. So if I went on a date with someone and they were rude to the waiter, I would be done, because I don't even care if you've had a bad day. That is not acceptable to be unkind. So that would be a non-negotiable. A negotiable might be something that you can be flexible with. My husband does not love yoga. I do yoga every day. That is not a deal breaker in my world. I'm good be doing it on my own. He can tease me about it. It doesn't faze me at all. But when we create that kind of avatar where we, as you said, know our likes, our dislikes, our absolutes, and our areas for flexibility, that becomes our compass. It becomes our guide. So when someone super attractive and bright and shiny comes walking through the door, we're not going to overlook those things because we've actually plotted it out. Like, oh yeah, meets some of the cool criteria, but there are five non-negotiables that are coming up, and that's it for me. I'm not going to proceed with wasting my time or energy because this person is not checking the boxes where I'm not willing to be flexible. So when we create this kind of ICA, it keeps us so focused. And obviously it can be a dynamic tool that is adjusted, but we know clearly what we're looking for, who we're looking for, and we're not willing to divert from that.
That's so important. And one of the things that I love about you is like the relationship to these business acronyms, these business words, because it does just make it, it makes it make sense. And I think that it makes it almost like, in some ways, it kind of like adds a level of realism. So you kind of get out of this like emotional fairy tale land where, of course, it's okay to be. I mean, I will admit I am the biggest hopeless romantic, you know, and I think that's totally okay. But also, when you kind of add it into the context that of something, of another aspect of my life that I'm already very comfortable with, business. So I'm like, oh, okay, like this makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, Disney and Hallmark and our rom-coms, we grew up with those and they create this fantasy land of relationship. And what I hear from a lot of people, is that this structure makes it too rigid or too cold. And I respectfully disagree. I think when you have the structure, when you have the plans and the terminology to make it logical and strategic, it allows for more fun, more romance, more spontaneity even, because you've taken care of the logistics, you've enhanced the communication, and you've created effective connection that now you can build off of.
And also, I like what you said about it, like taking pressure off. It's like, because you've already had these conversations, and love makes us do crazy things. I think we all can agree that, right? But I think the only thing that you actually realize out of lived experience is that money, for example, can make people be horrible human beings. And unfortunately, that is where some people do get stuck. It's because they haven't had these conversations about money, about finances, about investing, about even like paying bills on time before they enter into marriage. And then they start seeing things in their partner where they're like, oh my God, like you have debt, or you don't think it's a big deal to
not pay your bills on time? Like,
yeah. Yeah. The thing that I mean, I think we've all heard it in various fashions is people don't change significantly after marriage. I mean, people don't change significantly after age 25, unless there's some life, you know, damaging or traumatic event. So when you look at couples who haven't had the conversations or know it, but they're like, oh, that, you know, that'll change over time. He or she will mature to whatever. It's like, no, what you're buying is what you're getting. And just assume that it's not going to change. And if you can live with that, great. Because then any changes you could probably work from. But if you're hoping and praying that that person becomes someone who they're not, that again is just a recipe for a disaster. I talk to couples a lot. And when they say things like, well, you know, she doesn't do this or he doesn't do this, one of my first questions is, how long has that been going on? And often the response is, well, as long as we've known each other, I'm like, then why are you holding it against them now? You married them that way.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the reality. So yeah, having these conversations ahead of time. So, and it doesn't necessarily mean the relationship will break up if you get to a sticky point, but it means you get to resolve it before there might be a commitment, which then it gets more difficult to resolve.
Mm-hmm. So what other are the main topics aside from ICA that you really coach people on?
So when it comes to any of our relationships, and I said it earlier, check-ins are incredible. They are maybe the most powerful tool that we can use. So when I work with couples who are married or in long-term relationships or even just starting to date, it is establishing a schedule of consistent check-ins. My recommendation is usually 5 minutes every day so that you sit down and it's, what was the best part of your day? Or what was something really challenging about your day that maybe I could help with? Some kind of real deeper level question than how you doing good? How you doing good? Like that doesn't get to it, but 5 minutes, that's all every day. And then once a week, maybe a slightly longer check-in at the end on a Friday, Saturday or Sunday, you know, was there anything from this week we need to really take a look at or resolve? Anything we could do better? What were the things we really nailed this week? So maybe that's 20 minutes. And then certainly a monthly check-in. Now that's the longer investment. That is the time, I call it a relationship business meeting, where you're sitting down with an agenda, because agendas are good in meetings. It keeps us organized. And you go through everything in your life, finances, you know, giving the oversight of what's going on with the finances, whoever is the designated person for that. What's going on with the internal stakeholders in the house, pets, kids, elderly parents you're taking care of? How's our sex life? How's our intimacy? You cover everything that impacts your relationship. And it shouldn't be more than an hour because no good meetings are longer than an hour. And then finally,
that's the truth.
In business and in relationships. And then finally, ideally, a quarterly retreat, because businesses go on quarterly retreats and we know why. It's to decompress, to get to know each other as people outside of work, to get away from the day-to-day stuff. Why wouldn't we need or want that in our relationships? And when couples say, well, we don't have the money, it is not about money. Your quarterly retreat could be that you leave the kids with a relative, ideally, or a babysitter. And maybe your quarterly retreat is just 8 hours in one day. It doesn't have to be a full weekend. You can make it, but it's an extended period of time where it's more about connection than logistics.
Okay, this is so cool because I have, as I'm saying, I'm like, oh yeah, I've done that. But at work, not in my relationship. And that is so smart.
Thanks.
But it's like, why isn't it something that we all do naturally?
Yeah.
I forget. So why do you think that? Why is it something that we don't do naturally? Do we just become complacent?
Yeah, I think there is a level of complacency. I mean, when we think about, you know, when we're dating, there's intention to it for, I think, almost all couples. I mean, we think about what we're going to do to make the other person happy or how we're going to connect or what an evening in intimacy is going to, there's planning to it and that intentionality around it. And then we get married and life gets in the way. And I get it. There's no fault or judgment around that, but it's whether a couple is happy with the complacency, if they're satisfied, if their relationship is not just surviving it, but continuing to evolve and grow, I can tell you it isn't. If you aren't approaching your relationship from certainly check-ins, but an intentional and a preventative way. Like, why are we waiting till the kids are gone and hoping that at that point we're going to be able to fix the relationship? That might be 20 right. years of things to fix. That's a lot to do instead of let's yeah. prevent it by having the regular check-ins, for example, so that things, we catch them early, we avoid them completely, and we continue to develop skills to navigate around challenges in the future.
That's yeah. it. I mean, absolutely. I mean, think about divorce, right? You hear so many stories of people saying, oh, well, when the kids left and both were out of the house, we realized that we were just strangers that were like passing each other each day. And then people end up splitting up because they haven't taken this time for one another.
Right.
I mean, I've even had friends who have said, like, you know, they have a kid and then all of a sudden they're like, oh my gosh, it's been 4 years since we've like had a date night.
Yes. Yes. Exactly. And I try, you know, it's funny because I have a total of four kids and my two daughters live near me and they're 20 and 22 and one's in a long-term relationship with her boyfriend. And I must preach this over and I'm like, you're early. You can start doing these things. Read mom's book. Go ahead. Read mom's book. Like the things, because if you can do that at the beginning, right when your relationship is starting, if you choose not to be in the relationship, it's not because things didn't work because you didn't have strategies. It's because it just wasn't the right relationship for you in terms mm-hmm. of who you are as a person and who that other person is. It's not because you didn't know how to communicate or you didn't check in or you lost your connection. Like, though, I wish mm-hmm. those weren't, I wish people could get to a point where it's like, you know, this actually isn't the relationship I want. It's nothing about you other than who you are as a person and who I am as a person. I think that would result in really lovely potential breakups because there'd be no blame or fault. It's just, hey, it's apples to oranges. It just doesn't mesh together instead of you doing this or me not doing this.
The communication piece. I always say that everything boils down to communication, whether you started off with it great and it dwindled away or you never were that great at it. And then you know, that's a tough one to swallow if you were never that great at it. But I think, you know, understanding how to communicate with one another, but then especially in regards to, you know, these different topics, mm-hmm. I'm curious. I'm single and I am, you know, just starting to get back out in the dating world. So when do you advise people to begin having these types of conversations?
Great question, Nikki, because that could be really awkward if it's Tuesday.
Right.
One of the first things I start with, and not to be redundant, but if a person has their ICA, their ideal companion avatar, it becomes a way to decide what kinds of questions you want to ask on dates. So you're certainly not going to pull out a list or anything like that. I would hope you wouldn't do that. But
no,
it goes beyond just the tell me about your, you know, growing up, or it actually makes communication, I think, at least what my single clients have told me is they look at their ICA and they're like, oh, I really want to figure out if this person, you know, has this core value or, you know, has this in terms of my non-negotiable. It becomes a way to structure the conversation so they can find out some of the initial information, again, to know whether to move forward or not. And then once someone decides to move forward and make it a more consistent relationship, whatever that, however a couple might define that, then I actually don't think it is ever too soon to have a conversation about, you know, tell me, you know, out of curiosity, like what's your perspective on spending? Like, I'm always a big, like, blame it on a podcast. I listened to this podcast mm-hmm. and they were talking about how, like, couples have these different spending styles. What do you think yours is? Always do that, even with my husband. And he's like, really, this is just a question in your head. I'm like, yeah, whatever. It's fine. You're running podcast in your head. It's fine. But you can do that. And you can, you know, it's not accusatory. You also don't have to feel like you're watching every move to determine how their spending is. You just ask the questions. And again, it doesn't have to be a deal breaker other than, oh, so you tend to see money as a way to really enjoy life in the moment. I kind of see money as a way to establish life in the future. How do you think that could ever be like a balance? Do you think that could ever be something mm-hmm. that a couple could like get to some kind of, you know, negotiation around? Why not have that conversation? I mean, that's a deep conversation that doesn't have to necessarily be uncomfortable. So maybe I'm contradicting myself that maybe it's never too soon. I mean, maybe not the first date, but I guess it's more how you structure the questions and knowing where your relationship is to know, are we going to be personal and say, what are your spending habits like? Or is it going to be like, yeah, just out of curiosity, you know, what was it like growing up in your household? Was it, you know, did you watch your parents work really hard? Or, you know, I think there's lots of ways to get to the information you're looking for in appropriate and subtle ways.
Yeah. I mean, I think I love the blame, you know, blame on somebody else thing. Like, oh, I heard this on a podcast. Like, what do you think? That's brilliant, because it's easy to, you know, say. Okay. So we were talking about the check-ins from a, you know, I like the daily kind of like the peak and pit, or like rose and thorn. And, and I think that that's so good, because then it could lead to such a more in-depth topic, right? Because if I come home and I ask you like, hey, what was your peak and pit? And you tell me a pit, like, oh, I had this really weird interaction at the grocery store. I'm going to be like, tell me more. Like, what do you mean weird interaction? Who was that person? Yeah. So I think that that's like really cool. So, but then, you know, when you go onto these deeper, longer, you know, whether it's the Friday night over a quick glass of wine before we're taking the kids somewhere, or if it's a quarterly check-in, like you said, and getting deeper on things, like, are we talking mainly about the logistics of the relationship? And so what I mean by that is like, you know, anything in the house that needs to be fixed, any finances, like what are the kids up to if we have them? Or is it more like, do I still think you're hot?
Like, I love that question.
You know,
and it's, I really appreciate that, because it shocks me, Nikki, how often I will work with couples who have been married for decades. And naturally, as a couples coach, I'm going to ask about their sexual life and their intimacy, because those are two very concepts. And they get embarrassed. They're like, are we really going to talk about that? And I'm like, are we not? I mean, why, what? Why wouldn't we talk about that? And unless they're asexual. And I've had couples where it's just completely off the table. They're both okay with that. That is their choice, as long as they are both, and it's both in agreement, and it's not affecting them in a detrimental way. So in answer to your question, all of the above. So the weekly check-ins and the monthly check-ins and the retreats can certainly have conversations around, I hope they have conversations around sex and intimacy. You know, what is our goal for how often we have sex, how often we are intimate? I'm, again, remembering those are two separate things and very much related. But check-ins are also in the moment. And couples, I think, especially after dating, or maybe for a lot of women, they never did it, in terms of, how does that feel? Is this the way you like it? Is that the spot you were telling me about? You know, tell me the rhythm you like. I mean, specific check-ins. And don't even get me started on women after menopause. Check-ins become even more important, because our bodies have changed so much, and we're learning about them. And our poor partner, you know, if they've always been dedicated and devoted to our pleasure, now they're relearning too. And if we can't help them by offering feedback and offering answers to questions, then, oh my God, it's really challenging. So yes, check-ins around our most intimate parts of our life. And check-ins can also be integrating strategies for how to build our sex life or our intimacy. And one that a lot of my clients seem to love is one I came up with called the ABCZ list. So,
wait, say that one more time.
ABCZ? Z.
Oh, ABCZ. Okay.
Yeah. So this is especially helpful for couples who are either in ruts in their sex life, or it's non-existent. You know, they're too busy or too tired. So they get to sit down together. So it's a check-in with a very structured approach, because they might be uncomfortable. And the first category is A. And these are sexual activities that the couple regularly does and really enjoys and wants to make sure they keep doing. You write it down. The B list is something that maybe they did once in a while or once before, and they're both really wanting to do again. So a couple I worked with on their honeymoon, they had sex on the beach. And they were like, it was so amazing. Like, we had blankets, so no sand got anywhere. The sound of that was on their list. Okay, cool. But, you know, so that was limited once on their honeymoon. The C list is anything that one partner is really interested in trying and the other is open to trying. So it could be anything, but just that they're both receptive, one's really interested. And the Z list is something that one or both partners is a hard no. And it doesn't matter if it's only one partner, that's a hard no, because they are, at least at the, you know, and you can always revisit and ask about it, but at that point in time, it's a no. And what this does is it provides an opportunity not only to create the check-in and the communication about something that some couples get uncomfortable about, but then it creates a menu of things that, hey, yeah, we really love doing this on a regular basis. Or, all right, there was that thing we wanted to try, but we have to go buy a couple things on Amazon. So let's go do that so we're prepared for next time. It just allows that to be, instead of sitting on the couch, hey, what do you want to do? I don't know. Hey, what do you want to do? I don't know. It provides just an opportunity for, let's pick something and have that connection.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, I think all of these different things that you're sharing and these different strategies, what I'm seeing is that they kind of just open door for further conversation, because you're structuring it in a way where it's like, hey, we're going to have this conversation and we're going to share some things, and maybe we might be each a little nervous, but we're both going to do it.
Right?
So like we're in this together, but then it could, like, you could end up walking down some paths that maybe you've never thought about because you had never voiced it. Right.
And I've seen, you know, again, going back to that business analogy, you know, in business, a lot of times, I don't know if you've been in meetings like this, Nikki, but, you know, sometimes there's introverts in a room of extroverts, and they're just not as willing to open up and share. So some of the best leaders I've seen is they create a side way for introverts to fully communicate, whether it's Slack, whether it's a Google Doc, but that way the communication continues to happen just in a different way. So when couples are really uncomfortable about having a face-to-face conversation about sex, for example, or anything, even a difficult topic that's just uncomfortable, like parenting, a lot of times they will do something like that. They'll use Google Docs, or they'll use a shared notes on their phone. So they both can communicate, they both can contribute, and it works in a way that they're comfortable, because if you're not comfortable, it's going to be harder to communicate. Not impossible, but harder.
Yeah.
And what I've seen is that the more they do that, the more likely it is that they're going to start to communicate face to face over time.
I mean, I'm thinking about this now, like through a business lens, but it's also now it's like acknowledging, like, oh, okay, this is how I need to communicate with this employee. And this is how I need to communicate with this employee or this peer or whomever. And doing that in a way that you get the best out of them. Yeah. And so it's like, if it's this person that you fell in love with, that you're in a relationship with, you would ideally want the same thing.
Right. And it's very similar. You know, there's great books on love languages and that sort of thing. And one of the ways that I talk to couples about intimacy, that connection from one of the five senses, is creating some type, again, menu for their partner. So if I brought, for example, I love sunflowers. They are my favorite flower. I just love them. Mm-hmm. And if I love them, of course, my husband must love them. So I'm going to bring him sunflowers. That is not something that he finds sensually pleasing. Like, that's just not his thing.
Right.
But when a couple sits down and says, okay, tell me some things that when you see them, they make you feel joyful or peaceful or just happy. Tell me some things that when you smell them, joyful, peaceful, happy. When you create that kind of menu and you share it with your partner, it makes the relationship easier. It's not prescriptive. It's something that they can say, you know what? Oh, right. One of the things that she really loves are those dark chocolate brownies from that local bakery. I mean, that's very personal. So I'm just going to zoom in and I'm going to grab it for. Easy, because our partners can't read our minds. When people say, just know, or she should just know, it makes my skin crawl. I'm like, why? We're not mind readers. And why wouldn't you want to just be able to say, here are some of my favorite things? And then your partner gets to choose to use them to enhance that intimacy with you, because they thought of you and they heard you and they've seen you.
And they made, exactly. That's the best thing. It's like, and that really is such a way to feel loved, when somebody knows you so well that they know you love something so specific, and then they bring it for you, or they do something for you. And I love that you brought up love languages, because I've always been a fan of love languages, but it wasn't until my last corporate role that I actually realized that they transfer over into business as well. Cool. I mean, so from a relationship perspective, I mean, I tell people all the time, if you don't know your love language, I'm like, send the link, take the test, because that will help you in your future relationships, understanding why you're feeling the way you feel, positive or negative, if you know what kind of like makes you internally tick.
Absolutely. I mean, that's, and I love that you said that, Nikki, if you don't know your, so it's not just knowing your partner's, it's knowing yours so you can communicate with it. And to be very frank, and I'm not afraid to be apparently, but you know, one of my love languages is physical touch. And when my husband and I go a certain period of time without having sex, I feel disconnected to him. I know that's a role reversal, but that's just how it is. And so I'll say to him, hey, I hate to tell you, I put it on the on our shared calendar that no one else. I said, but tonight you're going to meet me in the bedroom early. We're not going to watch TV. And he never disagrees, but always willing. But it's because I know that about myself, that I know when all of a sudden I'm getting more quickly irritated with him, or I'm like, oh, it's been this. We need to fix that. We need to adjust it. But I'm able to communicate that and have that awareness because I do know that about me. And I know for him, it's physical touch in a different way, that he is not an overly touchy person, but he does like it. Me just squeezing his shoulder or coming up behind him and giving him a hug, I know that is comforting to him. So it's not just knowing your partners, it's knowing your love languages. And you are so right about business. That's one of the biggest mistakes in relationships and businesses. People just assume the way they like to receive motivation is how everybody does. And I'm like, that is pretty arrogant. Ask the question, check in and just say, how do you like to be, you know, receive accolades? How do you like to be motivated? Such a powerful way of doing it.
It is. It makes all the world of difference. And so I also think about too, like what our love languages are when we are loving others. You know how like some people will be like, oh, like I've said before, like my love language is cooking for other people. Like that's one of the ways that like I show love. So it's like, I feel like there's these twofold or maybe threefold, right? It's like knowing my own, knowing my partner's, and then knowing how I show affection.
Agreed. And good. We can cook together, Nikki, because my sister always, I can't believe you make these elaborate meals. I'm like, that's how I show people I love them. Like, it is worth it to me to make something that they are going to just love to be sitting with. Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
I agree.
Well, you know, it's funny. And I didn't even realize that about myself until a few years ago. I wasn't even dating this man. It was one of those lovely situationships. But I mentioned to one of my guy friends, I was like, oh yeah, I'm having him over for dinner. And he's like, oh, you like him. And I was like, what do you mean? I'm like, no, it's just like a hookup thing. And he's like, Nikki, he's like, you don't cook for people you don't care about. And I was like, oh shit. Whoopsie.
Or maybe it's just a nice foreplay.
Yeah. Oh, geez. So I'm curious, do you work with couples who are at a breaking point?
Yeah, that's a great question. Not typically. Typically when couples, and I do screen for couples. So if there's recent or current adultery, recent or current addiction, abuse, loss, those are areas where I do think couples should start with therapy. Those are clinical issues that can really get in the way, that typically involve things from the past that do need to be worked through. And I do ask couples, the defining question is, are you both here because you want this, you want this relationship to work? And if either one says, I don't think I do, or I'm not sure I really care, that's again, usually where I ask them to start with therapy and then certainly come back to me. But the way that I do coaching is really about where are you now and where do you want to get to in the future? And if you're not sure you want to be with that person in the future, it's kind of hard to do the work. So they at least have to be invested that they would like to try and make it work, that they do want to try and save the relationship. But if there's any like, I don't know, then it's like, maybe need to figure that out first.
Yeah, that makes sense. And that's totally fair because some of those topics that you touched on are so deep and layered and need to really be worked through. And that can take time.
Yeah. Exactly. And that's great and fine. And that has a place. So a lot of the couples I work with are either on the verge of making some kind of commitment and they want that foundation, or they've made their own mistakes and they don't want to repeat them, or couples who are in a rut and they know they want to be together, but they don't know how to get out of their own way. So, or I also have worked with couples who have tried therapy and it did not work for them. And they were like, nope, never doing therapy. I'm like, good. We don't do therapy here. We just do coaching.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's great because I think that there is a difference between therapy and coaching. And it's certainly when you get to like, you know, psychotherapists and psychiatry and all these different specialties and very specific types of trauma or whatnot. Those are so, so specific. But I think from just like a general therapy and coaching, those are still two very different things. Yeah. And I'm going to say, unfortunately, and maybe people will come for me for that, but I do think that unfortunately, therapy has become so like mainstream. And I think when sometimes when things get like really, really popularized, or it's almost like, oh, wait, what? You're not in therapy. You know, people are like judging you for not being in it, that the market can kind of flood with people who are doing a role that maybe they're not necessarily that qualified for. Yeah. So I've always kind of been on the fence. I've definitely seen therapists at different points in my life, but I'm just somebody who I am much more comfortable in a coaching container, mm-hmm. a coaching environment. So I think that it's wonderful that there are more relationship coaches popping up in this moment in time. I mean, I'm doing a level of relationship coaching myself, but it's more still about the individual versus like working with couples. Somebody asked me, they're like, oh, so are you like teaching people like how to attract the right partner? And I'm like, no.
Oh, I love it.
I'm like, no.
People have asked me that about the ICA. Is this like to manifest? Like, no, it's actually so concrete. No, just, yeah. And I agree though that, you know, and I love that I have a background in clinical psych because it does help me not only help people understand the differentiation between therapy and coaching, but it helps me when I'm working with clients. If I see anything where I'm like, that really needs to be with therapy. It's such a, it's a comfort to me as a professional to be able to know how to differentiate and know that, you know, my background and then my additional training let me really focus on coaching. Cause you're right. There are people out there that have, I hope, the best of intentions, but there's an element of training and development to really understand. Cause you're working with people's minds and emotions and relationships, and that is not something to play with.
And their money. I mean, there's so many factors that play. Yeah. So here's a question for you that I'm curious about. Have you had people who have just been so like, oh no, like you're wrong, like business relationships, what are you talking about?
Yes.
And how have you handled that as you've evolved into this
niche? It's been fun. And especially with the book launch, I had to do a lot of social media that I was not used to. So that put me right out there, which was fun. So I got a lot of practice on how to come back. And it, you know, first of all, I have no problem with healthy debate, but arguing, I'm like, I don't need to argue this. I've seen it work. I know it works. Well, really, it comes down to, well, first of all, have you tried other things? And a lot of people who want to fight back actually have. And I'm like, did they work for you? And most of them will say no. And I said, well, this is another option. It gives you an alternative to what you tried in the past. Second, walk me through how a business gets constructed. You know, how do we make sure if I told you here's $1 million, but I will give you $10 million if you make a successful business in 3 years, how would you do it? And I will have them walk through all the things they do. And guess what, Nikki? It's all the things I talk about. I'm like, okay, so what's different about making a successful relationship in 3 years? And they will try it's different. I'm like, tell me how. Because you can't tell me that sometimes in business there's emotions and we want to try and have structure so that the emotions don't take over. Well, guess what? Same thing in a relationship. So I do like to positively manipulate people's thinking so that we take something that they know and they're very secure and comfortable talking about. And now let's just apply it. And you tell me what the differences are. Because they're just not, except for emotion. And I would argue there is emotion in business. Most people start businesses because they want something. They want to be successful. They're passionate about the product. They want to make $1 million. So there's something that they want. And how do they keep those emotions in a place that doesn't interfere with actually attaining the goals? Sounds like a relationship.
Definitely.
To me.
Yeah. I feel like it's part of critical thinking. It's part of constructive dialogue. It's part of just like having a conversation with someone that maybe has a different viewpoint than you to challenge and to ask why. And if you can do that and transfer those, you know, to your personal life too. Yeah.
And the other interesting thing that we haven't touched on is the idea of how a model like mine can, the neuroscience behind it. So much of our relationships are based in the amygdala, the emotion center of the brain, the amygdala and hippocampus. And it drives a lot of what we do. But if we are so amygdala driven, it shuts down the logical part of our brain, the prefrontal cortex. And then we can't make logical, rational, strategic, you know, decisions or problem solving that are based on facts. And thankfully, if we can get our prefrontal cortex involved, it shuts down a lot of the amygdala. So this model actually gets your prefrontal cortex juiced up. So then it creates at best, at least a balance between the amygdala and the emotions and the logic of the prefrontal cortex. That's what I want for couples. More strategy. So then it's more love.
Okay, that's brilliant.
I love it. I really do love what I do.
Well, Dr. Robin, you are awesome. I loved learning from you. And I feel like I had so many aha moments. And I think that this is going to be a very beneficial episode for my listeners. Tell everybody how they can find you.
Sure. Certainly my website, Dr. Robin Buckley, all one word. And God help me, 8 different social media platforms where you can also find information about my book, which is on Amazon. And the book is Marriage Incorporated, The Boardroom Blueprint to a Lasting Love.
Oh, I love it. And everything will be linked in the show notes as always. So Dr. Robin, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks, Nikki. It was a trip.
Thanks so much for being here for another episode of The Scarlet Edit. If you haven't already, I would absolutely love a rate and review on your podcast app of choice. It means so much and it really helps move this show along the way and get in front of a larger audience. I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, I would love to hear from you. It always makes my day when I get a note from a listener saying what they learned from the episode, why they liked it, or even why they didn't like it. Have a great week, and we will see you next Thursday.